Stuck in a dinner rut? Let Cook Unity handle dinner with chef-crafted meals delivered right to your door. Cook Unity makes it easy with new menu drops, weekly recommendations, and a growing community of award-winning chefs, plus over 400 flavorful meals for every palate. Shake up your meal routine. Go to cookunity.com/mealtime50 or enter code mealtime50 before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's cookunity.com/mealtime50.
Football on Off the Ball.
Here's another meeting we can speculate about. What did Arnie Slot say to Mo Salah on Friday, I wonder?
Just cop on, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
And you are welcome to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to seven. We hope you're doing great around the country. What is coming up on the show today? Well, we got two live and exclusive commentary games to bring you from the Premier League. First up, the leaders Arsenal up against Crystal Palace with Phil Egan and Brian Kerr describing that one from 2 o'clock. Then we're going to showcase the meeting of Everton and Tottenham Hotspur. Stephen Doyle and Keith Tracy will call that one. Shamrock Rovers may finally clinch the League of Ireland Premier Division title today. Stephen Bradley's on his way to the Ryan McBride Brandywell, where they're going to take on Derry City. We'll have the latest on that. And in Gaelic games, there are 14 county finals across hurling and football. We will have regular updates on all the matches. You will not miss a thing, folks. We'll also bring you the best of the Sunday paper review. Now, this weekend, Off the Ball have teamed up with the Road Safety Authority with a reminder to look out for everyone using the roads this bank holiday, from people walking and cycling to those on motorbikes or e-scooters. We all share the roads together. Slow down, stay alert, and look out for each other. And you can find out more at rsa.ie. And the Sunday Paper Review presenter Adrian Barry and Shane Hannan join me for the news round. Good afternoon, gents.
John, Shane.
Afternoon, lads.
County finals in Westmeath and Monaghan today, lads.
Yep, the big ones. The big two, the two counties everyone wants to know about, of course. In fairness.
Luke Lachlan continues to shoot the lights out for the Downs. We could see him get it done. Brilliant year for Westmeath as well.
Jack Cooney's over the
Carlstown County.
Yeah. So look, it's an interesting final as well. And in Monaghan, similarly, so Scotstown. 13th final in a row, I think, in the senior championship in Monaghan, and obviously stacked with county players, including Rory Began and Conor McCarthy and these lads. So
could they do a job for Liverpool at the moment?
Yeah. Tell you, it's getting to that. I don't know if it's getting to crisis territory. I don't think it
Not
really is,
all.
But it's a mini crisis.
It depends how you define crisis. Mm. But it can't be far off. Like, yeah. You know, given where they were at, are they out of the title race?
No. 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 I
don't know about that now.
They're not. You think they are out of the title race?
Well, they're like, they've conceded 14 goals. Arsenal and City are looking much better than at the moment. Like, they've lost four games. I mean, how many games can you lose and win a title?
Yeah, but it doesn't look like a year where there's going to be a team with, you know,
Arsenal,
90 points. Maybe Arsenal get to the dominant
stage. It just depends how many games Arsenal draw. They drew 14 last season, but they've only conceded 3 goals. They haven't conceded a goal in the Champions League. They look very strong. They bolster their squad. They're going to pick off teams at the Emirates. And City are looking like they're resurgent. So, I mean, Liverpool have got a lot of work to do now. A lot of work to do for me.
Yeah. Like, listen, obviously, there's people screaming at the radio going, what are you talking about? Liverpool are nowhere near out of it. They've had a bad run. They're going to come right. They've got enough players. See all of that. But it just looks exceptionally poor from at the minute. And can we not fall into the trap of what happened on the TV last night about talking too much about Liverpool? Like,
because you got something to say here.
I have something to say. I have to say,
Brentford fan,
I so enjoyed that game last night. It was like it was a proper football match, which is the greatest compliment you can possibly give a sporting event. But Brentford is just an absolute joy to watch. They've like a lot of really likeable players. They're playing a really enjoyable style of football to watch. Like, the pressure they're putting on that Liverpool kick out, it was the same I mentioned before. I was at the Manchester United game where Brentford obviously won that game, and like, United looked shocking, but I think a lot of that was to do with the Brentford positive play. There wasn't half enough conversation about that amongst the panel last night, I must say. Joe Cole and Steve McManaman, there was an awful lot of obviously pouring over the unfortunate, you know, events at Liverpool and how poorly they're doing. But Brentford, looking at that game last night, you thought, is this like 11v9? Where are Brentford's extra players come from here? Just the desire, the energy, and obviously the connection they have with their manager is exceptional. You had all the drama about the two long throws that weren't at the end of the first half. Keith Andrews getting the message in. What are we doing? Take a two Coyote throws up near exact sort of territory where you typically throw the ball into the box. Mm. And for some unknown reason, they don't take that opportunity. It seems slightly bonkers. towards the end of the actual game, then, of course, they were crying out for just take the short throw. But yeah, there was an awful lot of drama, and it's brilliant. Yeah, really good game.
The carefree nature of their strikers in the last few seasons, Tony, Mbeumo, Wissa, who are all gone now, and Igor Thiago's got 6 goals this season in the Premier League, was pretty much injured for the entirety of last season, and has had an interesting life, had a tough upbringing, well, in terms of like, lost his dad when he was a teenager, you know, didn't come from luxurious surroundings in Brazil, played in Bulgaria, and now he there was a carefree nature to the way he was playing last night.
Yeah, you sense that with a lot of Brentford players, Jetty. Like, you look at Otara, very impressed with him when I went to see him that day as well. Like, the penalty last night, how Collins didn't give away a penalty.
That's the second time he's got away with one.
Gakpo. That,
people would argue.
Ali McCoy's commentary was saying that he understood why it wasn't a penalty. I must admit.
But he did buy it. He certainly bought it.
But in the context of, if you'd said this to me 15 years ago, I would have said exactly, you know, 100%, no penalty. How could it be? But just given the nature of what penalties are given for now, including the one that Otara won for the Virgil van Dijk. So there was a little push. If nothing happens after that, there's no discussion about a penalty, right? Like, nobody in their wildest dreams is saying this is even close to a penalty. But Van Dijk nicks him then again with the foot just outside the box, which results in a review of the whole thing. And then they've decided the initial contact was in the box.
Which it was on the line, yeah.
On the line. I still scratch my head over that one.
Well, it would have been a foul outside the box. You know, if you're a referee, for Van Dijk's, it was clumsy enough from Van Dijk to
it was clumsy. But let's say this second nick doesn't happen.
Yeah, then they don't look at it.
Then it's no penalty. But it isn't. But not even do they not look at it, I don't think it's a penalty. It was a bizarre one.
Yeah, still, you can't take it away. But the funny thing is, with Brentford, they will show you how they're going to beat you. Like, before the game, Liverpool would have known about the set pieces, the throws, the counter-attack, and then Brentford get a goal from a set piece, a goal from a counter-attack. Yeah. So Arne Slot obviously prepared for those set pieces, but I mean, they were just peppering Liverpool and the goal was coming for a few minutes before it went in. But they're just so ultra impressive.
Well, they've beaten Liverpool. They've beaten United. They only lost to City, let's remember, by 1-0. Like, this is a team with intent.
Well, the first half against Forest the first day was a shambles.
It was.
So they've come a long way since then.
We're 3-0 down at halftime, is that right? Something like that.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. They were a shambles, absolutely. And they held it together, if I'm right, in the second half, and maybe they might have ended up or something. Yeah. But no, they are a very likable team. It's a great little ground. The worry actually you'd have for them is in January. You know, when you have players, you have teams looking at a lot of those players and thinking,
I can see the crystal ball. The Brentford Supporters Club of Ireland,
it's founding member over here. Yeah, until all the Irish players leave, and then I'm like, who? But did I go and see them? Really?
Yeah.
But no, a lot of likable players, and like we were making the point in the paper review, they're on 13 points now after whatever number of games it is, 7 or 8 games. Like, to survive last season, JD's team 38 points, so there's a long road to go.
Yeah, we did win a European trophy.
Just want to mention that.
A long road to go.
You have a bit of Keith Andrews.
Yeah, of course. We have to start the show with him because Liverpool's Premier League title defence continuing to stutter after that 3-2 defeat at Brentford last night. Liverpool now losing 4 top flight games in a row. But the story, of course, from our perspective here at Brentford at the moment, Keith Andrews told TNT Sports after the game that he got the personality and courage he had asked from his players.
Yeah, in abundance, and we had to show it. We knew we would have to show it. It was always going to be a very difficult game. The level of opposition that we're facing will test you in very different ways, but really, really pleased with how we showed the personality, the character of the group, the resilience of the group, conceding the way we did, I suppose, just before half-time. That's twice in a row we've had disappointment just before half-time, Monday night against West Ham as well, and how we've started the second half, I think, has been excellent.
What pleased you the most about the type of goals you scored in this game?
It's a bit of everything, really. First one, set piece, obviously. Second phase, we're always a threat from that. A counter-attacking ability, something we work on from different parts of the pitch with the attributes of the players that we have. And then penalty obviously comes from really good play from Dango initially in terms of dribbling ability in and around the box. We thought we smothered them and didn't allow them to get out. Once we got a grip of the game after 10 to 15 minutes when they've controlled that first part, and then I thought we were excellent throughout.
You were booked just before half time when Liverpool scored their goal. What was it that frustrated you the most about it?
Yeah, I just felt we could have dealt with it initially a little bit better, how they got to that part of the pitch, and then worked a lot on how we defend in the box, and I'd seen at our corner mile we were 3v3, and then he gets free obviously and takes the opportunity. But I have to say, the defending from the team, even the attacking players, which is a really key component of the way we set up the team, it was selfless. Everybody put their bodies on the line, and I think we got what we deserve tonight.
You've had a much stronger start to the season than I think many people would have predicted. And does beating the Premier League champions here tonight show that you can beat anyone?
Yeah, clearly. Home record's been really good. The way we approach games, I think we're constantly growing as a group, building confidence, building relationships, connections, rapport as a team, as players, staff, new staff, not just myself. So we're certainly heading in the right direction. And again, results like this, the magnitude of it, against the Premier League champions is a pretty special evening.
Yep. Steve Andrews there, was it speaking indeed, to TNT?
It was indeed, yeah. We have more reaction from TNT as well from that game last night, because also speaking was Liverpool skipper Virgil van Dijk after their fourth league defeat in succession. He was asked what concerned him the most about their poor run.
It's difficult to say. The fact is that we didn't keep clean sheets for 9 games, and that's it's easy then to blame particular person or the back line or set pieces, but it's a collective thing in the end as well, and everyone has to look in the mirror, including myself, and that's what we all do, and that's what we all have discussed as well. I'm sure we will get out of this, but we don't get out of this just by talking about it. Obviously I have to come here because you guys asked me to come here, otherwise I would just focus on trying to get back on track with my team, and we try to improve. That's what we work on. It's not that we're doing nothing in training or nothing behind the scenes. We all want to improve. That's why we're on the pitch as well. But it's tough at the moment. But we need each other. We need the support. We need the guys and the people that were celebrating with us as well last year to be there for us now even more. And then I'm very, very confident that we will get out of this, because we have the quality, offensively, defensively. But the reality is that we are looking for, and the clean sheet, but definitely for a win again. And that's the reality.
Yep, Virgil van Dijk speaking to TNT Sports after that game last night. So, yeah, Liverpool still looking for that win to break this run of 4 successful defeats in the Premier League. Elsewhere, Sunderland up to second after scoring late to beat Chelsea 2-1 at Stamford Bridge yesterday, while Manchester United's 4-2 victory over Brighton moves them to fourth in the table. Matheus Cunha scored his first goal for the club, and Brennan Bumo, the aforementioned, scored an impressive brace as United made it 3 wins in a row. Their manager, Ruben Amorim, spoke to Sky Sports after full-time.
4 Manchester United goals, 3 points into the top 4. How do you feel about that?
I feel good. 3 points at home. I think we play well. We suffered in the end. A little bit our fault in the way we suffered the first goal. You can sense that in that time of the game we are near the fourth goal, not to suffer one. But they did everything. They run. They play with the ball. They kick the ball when it was needed. So it was a good game.
When you were 3-0 up, Brighton got it back to 3-2. What was going on in your mind at that point?
It's something that happened in football. You have the game is under control, and then you suffer a goal. And then we suffer a little bit. They have a lot of talent. They have a lot of quality with the ball. And they control that. And they use that momentum to control the game. But we are improving in the way we respond to bad moments. And today was we did it again.
Get out the smelling salts. Manchester United fourth in the Premier League table.
Yeah, look, I watched this game last night when I got home. I did. I don't know if you lads have ever tried this in the modern day, where we finished work obviously yesterday. You know, show finished up at 5 o'clock. Game was starting at 5:30. I was going to be in the car driving home to Monaghan. Didn't want to ruin the result for myself. Wanted to watch it and catch back when I got home. So turned off all push notifications. WhatsApp groups muted.
10 messages from me. Why did that go wrong?
That's why I didn't reply to you for hours, John. But it's a tough thing to do, avoiding a score in the modern day, because then I click into the catch up, but Gary Neville is there talking live about the match, and I'm trying not to listen. Click into Microsoft Teams, Mick McCarthy. I accidentally see a message from our own colleague Mick, who says, "Glory, glory, Man United," and I'm thinking,
Is this ironic? Have
United won, or have they?
This still could mean anything.
Because he's not a United fan, so that could mean United have lost the game. So
you should have been on an island, Shane.
I should, but I managed to avoid the score.
Tried that with the UK celebrity traders during the week.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't work out for me.
Great. It's a great show.
I caught the spoiler on.
Don't tell me because I've never even seen it.
TikTok.
I've seen the Irish one.
Yeah, it's very good. Any Brilliant. Episode of I'm into any into all and any varieties of it.
Yeah,
very
Alan
good.
Carr is my personal favorite.
Don't spoil it.
He's so good.
Don't.
Yeah, just a favorite character in it.
Yeah. Is he still in it though?
This is the
glory Alan Carr.
Yeah, the spoilers are aplenty. But I watched the match last night, and I have to say, yeah, United like at 3-0, they looked really dominant.
They pressed quite high.
They did.
And
yeah.
Look, maybe the fact they've no European games, no obviously League Cup at the moment. He's doing a lot of work in the training ground, and you know, they did spend a lot of money on Cunha and Mbeumo, and both have scored obviously in the game last night. Brighton can be a bit funny that way. They can beat anybody, they can lose to anybody in like three games in a row. Maybe they're turning a bit of a corner. We'll ask Brian Kerr about it. And Brian will be on duty with Phil Egan, our match commentator for Arsenal, the leaders against Crystal Palace. Our first Premier League commentary game of the day. Afternoon, Phil.
Good afternoon, gents. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, Phil. And the teams are in. I don't think there'll be many changes. Are there any?
Well, not for Arsenal from last weekend's win over Fulham. Now, obviously, they made changes for the great win over Atletico Madrid. The big doubt was Gabriel, but he's been past fit. Takes his place in central defence alongside William Saliba. He came off in the game against Atletico, the 4-0 win. Obviously, he scored. He was involved in Leandro Trossard's goal against Fulham last week. Trossard and Calafiori were rested in midweek, so they're brought back into the starting 11. So unchanged, as I said, from last week's 1-0 win at Fulham. That means Eberechi Eze will start against his former club. He scored the winner for Palace in the FA Cup final or against Manchester City in May. Eze scored 34 times in 147 Premier League appearances for Palace. Still hasn't scored a Premier League goal for Arsenal since his £60 million move in August. He's a League Cup goal. So that starting 11 then for Arsenal. Raya in goal, Timber, Saliba, Gabriel, Calafiori. A midfield three then of Zubimendi, Rice, Eze. And you've got Trossard and Saka on either side of Victor Gyökeres, who obviously got his two goals against Atletico. Palace boss Oliver Glasner doesn't tend to make changes, but he did make changes for the surprise 1-0 loss to AEK Larnaca in the Conference League on Thursday night. Adam Morton and Daichi Kamada were left on the bench. They come back into central midfield, as does Chris Richards. He's back in the back three. He replaces JD Canvo, who was actually at fault for the Larnaca goal. So the Crystal Palace 11, Henderson in goal. You've got Munoz and Mitchell as your wing backs. The back three then of Richards, Lacroix and Gehi, Wharton and Kamada, as I mentioned, Sarr and Pino behind Jean-Philippe Mateta, who scored a hat-trick against Bournemouth last weekend. League leaders Arsenal have the best defence in the league, just three goals conceded. They haven't faced a single shot on target in their last two league games. Palace have had the most shots on target with 43. They've created the most big chances. So surely something has to give today, John.
Okay, Phil Egan, thanks so much. We'll have live commentary for Phil and Brian Kerr from 2. And we're going to build up to that and reflect on some of yesterday's games of Brian Kerr at about 1:35 on Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. We've got other matches kicking off at 2 o'clock, rather. I beg your pardon, 2 o'clock in the Premier League. This is a Sunday, not a Saturday. So Aston Villa against Manchester City, two changes for Villa. Buendia, who scored against Spurs, comes in and starts today, and Ollie Watkins back in their team as well. For Manchester City, we have four changes. Stones, Gvardiol, Bob and Bernardo Silva, the captain, into their team today. That is Aston Villa against Manchester City at Villa Park. Haaland leads the line for City today. Bournemouth against Nottingham Forest. Valkyo Milosavljevic has into the Bournemouth defence today. One change for them from the Palace game. For Forest, under Sean Dyche, now first Premier League game, four changes. Nicola Savona in defence. He does play a 4-2-3-1. Dan Ndoye, Callum Hudson-Odoi and Igor Jesus into the Forest team today. Morgan Gibbs-White captaining the side at the Vitality Stadium. And then Wolves against Burnley. Wolves with Keanu Hoover and John Reisner-Bellegarde into their side. Matt Doherty not involved today. And for Burnley, they're unchanged after their win over Leeds last weekend. Shane, what else do we have?
Yeah, well, Shamrock Rovers can secure a 22nd SSC Electricity League Premier Division title today. Victory over Derry City would see the Hoops return to the top of the pile with their fourth league win in 5 years. Kickoff at the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium is at 3 o'clock this afternoon. An hour later, there is a Dublin derby at Daly Mount Park with Bohemians hosting Shelburne. Sligo Rovers failed to get themselves out of relegation trouble in the Premier Division yesterday evening. They were held to a 1-1 draw by already down Cork City, which leaves them 8th placed in the table. John Russell's side can still end up in the relegation playoff spot and face potential champions Shamrock Rovers on the final day of the season. In the Scottish Premiership, attention turning to the top. A midday start for this one, Hearts against Celtic. And the latest score, Hearts 3, Celtic 1.
What?
63 minutes, a couple of quickfire goals there for Hearts. And that result would, if it remains that, leave Hearts well ahead of Celtic at the top of the Scottish Premiership standings. I'm just trying to see exactly what it would do to the top. So Hearts will be on 25 points, Celtic on 17 points. That'll be an 8-point lead. And by my quick research there, I don't think Hearts have won the Scottish Premiership or league top-tier title since 1959-60 season. So it's been a while.
4 years since another club other than Celtic and Rangers won. And who was the manager of the club that won? Shane Hannan.
Oh, Alex Ferguson, of course. Apologies. Oh, took me a second.
Aberdeen, 1985. We have Gaelic Games. Look, folks, we're going to get to everything today across hurling and football. You will not miss a thing between our Premier League commentaries. All the county finals, so much to go through.
Yeah, plenty. Just to mention as well, Na Fianna, the Dublin Senior Hurling Champions for 2025, they got the better of Lucan Sarsfield in last night's final just by a point. One goal and 20 points to 22 points, the final score in that one. Donal Burke's goal handed Na Fianna a third title in a row. And just to bring you up a taste of what's happening across the country today, Ballyhale Shamrocks will aim to become the most successful side in Kilkenny Senior Hurling history this afternoon. They face O'Loughlin Gaels, knowing that victory would secure their 21st title in the club's history. That would take them one clear of former kingpins Tullaroan. Throw in at UPMC Nolan Park is at 2:30. Half an hour later, Rathnure are looking to return to victory in the Wexford Hurling Championship. They're looking for a first senior crown since 2006 when they come up against St Martin's at Chadwick's Wexford Park. It's a 3:45pm start in the Tipperary final with reigning champions Loughmore Castellani up against Nina Era Ogue. In football, loads of games to speak of. Nemo Rangers and St Finbars battle it out to see who will be crowned core champions. That's at 3:30. As I mentioned, Scotstown in their 13th Monaghan Senior Football final in a row. Inneskeen stand in the way of a 24th crown. Throw in at Clonus from 2:30, and just one or two of the other games as well. We mentioned it in Armagh yesterday. There will be a first time winner of the Armagh Senior Football Championship, Madden Rapparees against St Patrick's Cullyhanna, 3:30 starting that one, and plenty of other games, including, of course, John, 1:45pm in Kerry, Austin Stacks against Dingle.
Tommy Rooney, our GA correspondent, is there. How are you, Tommy?
Hey, John. Yes, I've been dispatched to Tralee, and to describe it as a soft day, John, would be incredibly generous. There is a right wind whipping from left to right here as I'm looking out from the stand, and it's been raining all morning here, but that's not going to dampen the spirits. There's been serious colour, serious noise. I'm not sure if you can hear the drums from the Dingle kids and the terrace end behind the goals of the John Mitchell's end, but you will certainly quite soon. And I'm looking across at the brave Austin Stacks fans that are on the unsheltered terrace across from me with their flags. You can't stop the Rockies, and they're obviously in the midst of their march through the town of Tralee, down Rock Street, down to the stand at the minute. And the place is filling up here. Throw-in is at 1:45pm. And despite the conditions, we're going to have a belter here.
What are you expecting, Tommy?
I'm expecting a feisty affair, John. Like, Dingle and Dangan Cooch have been knocking on the door for a couple of years. Just even looking on a basic level here, mathematically, we've got a team with an average age of 28 years. They've brought back their AFL star and Mark O'Connor from Geelong. He's here. He had a big impact the last day. He's in the centre of the field. And if you were to flip it and reverse it, you've got an Austin Stacks side who were relegated for the first time in their history to the intermediate ranks back in 2023. They bounced back in 2024. And they're probably surprised a few by getting to a county final straight away. There's an average age of 23 in that starting team. And to contrast that with, I suppose, the professional star and Mark O'Connor, we've got one of the brightest young prospects in Ben Murphy, and there's so much talk about him and the Brisbane Lions and whether he's going to take up a Category B rookie contract in Australia next year. He's just 18 years old, and he'll be operating in that middle third alongside Footballer of the Year nominee Joe O'Connor, who has just epitomised how brilliant and how hardy and how exceptional Kerry and Kerry football has been in the last 12 months. So I'm expecting a cracking final here. So much inter-county talent and All-Ireland winners on both sides. You've got the Tom Sullivan, three-time All-Star, and the Gainies, you know, you've got Paul, you've got Dylan, you've got Connor, who's still heavily strapped, but had a huge impact the last day. And on the other side, you've got Joe O'Connor, as I mentioned, Armin Heinrich at centre-back, who kicked a fine two-pointer the last day, and he was on the Kerry panel. And obviously, of course, Dylan Casey, who there's been fitness doubts about, and he was also travelling South America. I haven't spotted him togging out, but the number 30 is where he's been assigned in the panel today. So I'm not sure where we see Dylan Casey today, but Austin Stacks are full of vibrant, young, towny forwards, as they're known in Kerry.
Tommy Rooney, live from the Kingdom. Thanks so much.
Talk soon, John.
Tommy Rooney there. Great setup for the Kerry County final.
Yeah, a couple of other games I did mention, in fact, just to bring you up to speed. Carlstown, Kinnegad, as we said, against the Downs. 3:15pm start for the Westmeath Football Club Decider. That's in Cusack Park and Mullingar this afternoon. Really interesting game in Tyrone as well in the final. Trillick, the favourites against Lochmacrory, because it's Lochmacrory's first time in a Tyrone Senior Football Club final. That's at 4 o'clock. Colera Strandhill against Shamrock Gales. That's a replay in the Sligo Football Decider from 3pm. 2pm start in Roscommon. Patrick Pierce's against St Bridget's Killeshi in the football final there. And Offaly, the football final as well for Ban against Tullamore, gets underway from 3 o'clock. Well, in Louth, 2:45, it's just stacked today. Niamh Martin against Newtown Blues in the decider there. So, look, I've probably missed some games, and apologies to the clubs that I've missed, but loads of action across the afternoon.
Okay, rugby-wise, we have Munster winning again.
Yep, they have their fifth win out of five in the URC this season. They had to come from behind to beat neighbours Connacht and keep their unbeaten run on track yesterday. Captain Jack O'Donoghue scored two tries on their way to a 17-15 victory at Thomond Park. Leinster picked up their second win of the year as they strolled to a 24-point win over Zebre in Dublin, 50 points to 26, the full-time scoreline, while the Lions handed Ulster their first loss with a 49-31 result in South Africa.
You had your lens across Leinster a bit, Adrian.
Yeah, what word did you use there, Shane?
They picked up their second. Strolled.
No,
not quite.
Certainly, they.
That's the classic news bulletin. Look at the scoreline and make assumptions.
Exactly what the scoreline looks like. And maybe towards the end, clearly as the scoreline suggested, that was what happened at the end. To give you your due, but before that, no, it was very much like, like this tit for tat game. That every time Leinster would get themselves 12 points ahead was kind of the gap, and then, you know, they would cough up something fairly straightforward on the Zebra point of view. You know, early try, Josh Kenny, Alex Soroka, who was, again, a later introduction, Max didn't get injured in the warm-up. He comes in and they get themselves into an early lead. Baloney goes over for Zebra. Thomas Dominguez goes over for Zebra. You know, it was that kind of tit-for-tat that you don't expect, to be honest, against Zebra, if we've been totally honest about it. But equally, you look at the Leinster lineup, like, to say it was much changed from last week is putting it mildly. There were an awful lot of players in there who've making their debut, or, you know, very few caps from a Leinster point of view. A lot of names that people wouldn't recognise. Jerry Caird, loosehead prop, Brian Deeney in second row, Dermot Mangan, maybe a little bit more known, second row, even Soroka himself, you know, and across the bench as well. So, yeah, I don't know. Job done from a Leinster point of view. It's been a really sticky start to the season for them. So
Munster, on the other hand, flying.
Munster flying. Munster are like, are they doing a line in like intercept tries this season? I don't know if Clyde McWilliams has them sort of designed out for this thing, but Clyde McMillan. But yeah, another great intercept try yesterday.
Mm. Well done to everybody who's been involved and maybe still being involved in the Dublin Marathon, because not everybody's going to do what Daniel Messvin did today.
No, Daniel Messvin has won the men's race of the Irish Life Dublin Marathon in a time of 2 hours, 8 minutes and 51 seconds. The American came home 18 seconds ahead of Manazot Siyum of Ethiopia. Sweden's Samuel Tsegay was third. David McLean, the first Irish athlete, across the finish line in sixth place, posting 2 hours, 11 minutes and 1 second. Ibisi Adunya of Ethiopia won the women's race in 2 hours, 26 minutes and 28 seconds. And this is a brilliant story as well. Ava Crean, aged 19, was the first Irish female home in a personal best time of 2 hours, 34 minutes and 11 seconds. So she's from Limerick. And what about this? She had never run competitively until April of this year. Cahal Dennehy pointing out on X, she had never run competitively before signing up for the Manchester Marathon in April and listed her target time as 3.5 hours. But she's after running 2 hours, 34 minutes and 11 seconds today to take home a national title. Quite incredible. And by the way, Shamrock Rovers head coach Stephen Bradley and assistant coach Glenn Cronin have completed the Irish Life Dublin Marathon. Both men crossed the line in a time of 3 hours, 57 minutes and 37 seconds. They will now board a helicopter. They're probably on board that helicopter right now.
Are they listening?
If you can get the earphones in on the helicopter. They're on the way to Derry, where Shamrock Rovers face Derry, as I said, knowing a win or draw will guarantee them the League of Ireland Premier Division title. At the finish line of the marathon, Stephen Bradley spoke to Oisin Langan. Have a listen.
Stephen Bradley, Shamrock Rovers manager, you have just completed the Irish Life Dublin Marathon and you have another marathon journey to make. We'll talk about that in a second. Firstly, how are you feeling?
Tired. We've done an under four, which is the aim. It was incredibly hard. The crowd was incredible. People on the way around were incredible. Look, we've done it, we've raised a lot of money, and that's what the aim was today.
You've done it for an incredible reason, as you've just mentioned.
Yeah, we have. Us as kids are an incredible charity to help families up and down the country in extremely difficult times. And this is a small way that we can help them out, and it'll go a long way to helping kids and families up and down the country.
How did you feel out in the course? Did you get a lot of support, a lot of encouragement and all that?
The support was incredible. Honestly, this day is a special day. The people of Ireland that come out and support you, It's special. It really is. It helps you get through. And thanks to every one of them. Like, you know,
I see you've two names written on your either arm there.
Yeah, Eve is Glenn's daughter. Was affected by cancer, and Josh, my son, was affected. And when it got tough, we just kept thinking of them two and looking at the names and understanding the reason why we're doing it.
You're collecting a medal now. You'll hope to be collecting a trophy later.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, that's the aim. Go to Derry now. And we have a league to win.
Stephen, well done. Thanks. Brilliant stuff.
Thank you.
Stephen, well done, lad.
Not brilliant.
It's class, isn't it?
With a league to win is like, we'll do them for you tonight type line, isn't it?
What a day he's
going to
have.
We're going to do it. Like that.
Remember Kevin Keegan left St James's Park in a helicopter in the 80s? I think it was after the final game of the season for Newcastle. He left in a helicopter.
To get out of there.
It's a bit like The Simpsons, was it? Is it Mo left in a spate? On a jetpack, he just went.
Was there a Jason Sherlock helicopter moment as well? I'm pretty sure there was.
Where he was playing for the under-21s or something?
Yeah, there was something where they ferried him from a football match to a GAA match or vice versa, soccer to GAA.
I'd highly recommend it.
Helicopters?
Yeah, highly recommend it.
Really? Go on.
Never been on one.
No, neither have I.
Our sister station Today FM did a thing called You Do the Maps, where we had to deliver 10 grand to somebody in a helicopter.
Celtic Tiger hanging off that.
So we got a helicopter from one of West Dublin somewhere to Clonmel. And so it's almost like Willy Wonka. You're flying over Ireland, and then luckily you got beautiful weather in an evening, the summer evening. And then we flew towards a hotel in Clonmel, flew over the Bulmers factory. And at the hotel, there was a hen. So there's about... maybe 100 women just all waving to us as we landed the helicopter on the lawn in the hotel in Clonmel and delivered the 10 grand to the fella who won the money.
Wow. How nervous were you?
I was great. I was happy out.
Happy out?
Yeah.
Oh, I think
don't know if I'd do it over New York now or the Grand Canyon. Mm. It might be a bit more maybe nerve-wracking, but that was fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Scary. I planes more so than helicopters for me. There's something about a helicopter.
What do you mean? You'd fly to Clonmel.
I have no problem with a plane. See, my brother flies. He's got a few solo flights behind him now down in Australia, and I did a few lessons myself back in the day. So I don't mind a bit of flying. Yeah, small.
What was more nerve wracking was getting a flight from Inishman to Galway on an
propeller,
small plane across the sea.
Yeah,
that was more.
Have you ever done a seaplane?
No,
never done one of those.
I've done one of those.
Right?
Yeah, nice.
I don't know how we got here. We got here because of Stephen Bradley, obviously. That's how we got here. Yeah. Fair play to him. I mean, like, and also to do it in a time of 3 hours, 57 minutes. I know that's not the important thing. That's a really decent time. And really great cause as well for the two of them.
Lara Gillespie, another person who's flying at the moment.
Absolutely. She said she felt diamonds in her legs before winning her world title this week. The Wicklow native took gold in the elimination race of the World Track Championships in Chile on Thursday. The 24-year-old is also the reigning European champion, having won the same event in February. I know she's spoken to Dara Smith-Nocton, 4 off the ball in the last 24 hours or so. You'll get that on the Off the Ball social channels.
Galway results, the 12:50 maiden hurdle, Amen Case 3-1 on favourite, and the beginner's chase at 125, Oscar's Brother 13-8 favourite. At Wexford, you have me in stitches, which the lads do all the time here, 12-1 winner of the beginner's chase at 12:30, the 105 at the handicap chase, Nuvotic, the 3-1 favourite, winning that for trainer Henry de Bramhead. Who's going to win this Formula 1, Piastri, Norris or Verstappen, Shane?
Piastri, in a word.
Okay. So what was in the papers, Adrian?
Get that short.
Could you give me any more?
Mexico Grand Prix, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And Norris on pole.
Norris on pole, but as you said, Verstappen's kind of won a couple of races in a row there to make it a little bit interesting, but still, yeah, it's McLaren's. It's McLaren's to win, you'd imagine.
What was in the papers, Adrian? You caught him O'Rourke as a special guest?
Hang on a second, John. We had two special guests this morning, of which you were one, and Colm was the other. And it's never a chore having Colm in because he is just fascinated by what a sports nerd he is. He's into absolutely everything and anything, and knows about it all and has a view on it as well. Loads in the papers today, including the line by Paul Joyce in the Sunday Times, just on the newsy side of things. Kiernan Dewsbury-Hall doesn't want us. The Everton midfielder would rather play for England, and said he's been courted by Ireland for half a decade, but not for me. He's 27? So give him a couple of years, and when the England call doesn't come, he'll be back to us. Two articles to mention. I'll go with the Mail on Sunday to begin with. Philip Lanigan. O'Connor may be the outlier when it comes to the concept of payment for GAA managers. It's on foot of the study from the GPA in relation to payments. Specifically, 64% of male players are content with the current amateur status scale at games. But you contrast that with 75% of male players supporting the idea that intercounty managers should receive payment over and above expenses. 41% of them saying it should be through fixed payment, and 34% believe just go for a full annual contract. So no better man to have in studio today to talk about that. So there is clearly a conflict about this entire amateur ethos of the GAA, and then this idea that, as we know, payments are paid to are made to club and county managers all around the country, and you know, at senior men's level, senior women's level, and all the way down. So, and significant payments at that. So, Jarlath Byrne's obviously saying that, you know, a draft proposal of managers receiving a €20,000 stipend, and just do away with it that way. So Cullen makes the point that that leaves them with 10 grand after declarations and all that. So it is a difficult one, and we discussed what potential silver bullet solutions there were for this. There's no silver bullet, just to give the game away on that, but worth listening to Cullen's thoughts on it. And then the other thing that I'll mention is the aftermath of the Jude McItamney misses in the NFL this week. A couple of pieces on this. Tommy Conlon, the Sunday Independent, was my go-to on it because he finishes with the great line. What happened to McItamney last week was just another day in Hollywood. As Sinatra sang, you're riding high in April and shot down in May, and then you're back on top in June. Quoting from the great line, but it was Jude McItamney from the great Swatra club, Anthony Toll's club in Derry, was an under 20 player 4 years ago, went to work on his kicking, got drafted into the US system, ends up not by chance, but by talent, obviously at the New York Giants, and missed two kicks after touchdown during the week. And it was enough. They'd given, they were playing the Broncos, who scored 33 points in the final quarter, unprecedented stuff. And obviously he's been scapegoated for this. He's fully accepting that he certainly had a part in failing to get the Giants over the line. But he was released on the Tuesday and then back in the squad again on Thursday by way of an international sign-up. So it's a really interesting story, and Tommy Conlon writes very well on it.
Very good, Adrian. You'll hear a section of the conversation on FM here later on News Talk. You can also check out the full Sunday paper review wherever you get your pods if you're an Off the Ball subscriber. Shane and Adrian, thank you so much for the news round this Sunday afternoon on Off the Ball Sunday. Got to take a break. We're going to be back with Brian Kerr shortly to build up to our first commentary of the day in the Premier League, Arsenal against Crystal Palace. Stay with us.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Hayley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.